This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Alabama 3, right? Isn't this the band? I think it's Alabama 3.
Frank, what was Zeke wearing last night? Did he just want to stand out? What was that?
A very expensive sweater.
Yeah, you know it was expensive.
I think now, someone looked at the price. It was like $600 or some obscene amount.
Kerber put Lindell in the box for pulling a Louganis on the air last night when it happened. So, Greg Louganis, imagine this. An Olympic diver from like 20 years ago is now brought up in NHL games in 2019. That's pretty funny. That's good. I appreciate the textures. Kerber called Maroon last night. Absolutely, he did. Oh, Hockey Bob, settle down. Let's see what else. Don't underestimate Goldschmidt's influences. You're right. He did change everything. Brian, did you call the restaurant Vesuvio?
Vesuvio, yep.
Yeah. Aunt Peg texting in with that. The last minute of ice time in a one-goal playoff game feels like it takes an hour. Tiger Mike. Yeah, but I don't mind waiting. All right, we're going to get Mr. Pang on here in just a minute.
I think we might have the audio of Curbs calling in Greg Louganis.
Are you kidding?
This is great. This is courtesy of KMOX on their Instagram account, but let's see if this is the audio. Play. Maybe loading. No, it's not loading on me. No. Let me see if their Twitter account has it. That's unfortunate.
What a callback, though.
That's unbelievable that he had the presence of mind to think about Greg Louganis. I'm sure if he said it, that's why the NHL Network people were saying it today on the radio.
Where on earth is this call?
And I guess that's my only complaint with playoff hockey is, I guess you do get to hear Kerber on the radio, but not being able to have the Panger Kelly contribution on television is super disappointing. Understand why the big television networks do that, obviously for the money, but it's disappointing that we can't have JK and Panger.
All right, here it is, finally.
Now Bortuzzo drops Lindell down. Lindell dives. Lindell dives again. Collinford put him in the box for being Greg Louganis. And then he dives again. Esa Lindell just dove three times, and the referee was going to put Robert Bortuzzo in the penalty box for cross-checking, Lindell in the penalty box for embellishment diving, then Lindell just dove a third time. What an absolute farce.
Oh, my gosh.
You think he jacked up?
I think we have. We always, I know Martin and I were wondering, and you've mentioned it too, Frank, you always need to find a villain in a series. And usually they just kind of appear as the series develops. Guy you just decide you hate by the time that series is over. I think that's Esa Lindell.
Yeah.
That's the player now we just don't like moving forward.
When they used to play San Jose, they had a player named Mike Ricci who had like the biggest nose of all time. But he was also a good player and the most – you just hated him with every fiber in your being for that for those seven games or six or seven games. I'm trying to think of some other guys you really hated.
Deadspin's headline is, Esa Lindell kept diving and diving and then suffered cosmic justice. Finally wrapping up the article with, the Blues now lead the series 2-1, and perhaps Lindell will see someone about his apparent inner ear issues.
uh, That is great. All right, let's get Mr. Pang on here. Let's see. Do you think it actually benefited having a penalty called on the Blues in the last minute? It allowed us to ice the puck. Interesting thought there. Yeah, it wasn't bad. Yeah. Ricci was the ugliest blank blank on the planet from Doug's prison wallet. He was. He was detestable. Oh, I'd like to read you read your text, angry cabbie, but I can't. Gibby, the big rig, can score. Yes, he can. Let's see what else. We're going to get Mr. Pang on here in just a moment. Jocelyn Lemieux, when he was playing for another team. That's good. In fact, that could be a topic today at 855-282-8255. The most detestable players that the Blues have faced in a playoff. It's now Essa Lindell. Darren Pang joins us now. Darren, I know you enjoy fine movies from time to time. What about the acting of Mr. Lindell?
Yeah, it was well called by the official, Frank. I'll tell you that. There's a lot of times where, you know, a referee's not watching the play and doesn't understand, you know, the embellishment of a player. But I give the referee a lot of credit because, you know, I mean, let's face it, Robert Bortuzzo is a big boy. You start cross-checking and the guy goes down, and Lindell's over 210 pounds. But he saw the legs flopping and the actions of Lindell and made the right call. And, boy, was Robert Bortuzzo ever sour. He was so embarrassed that Lindell went down as easy as he went down that he gave him another two shots. So I even noticed that the mild-mannered Alexander Steen also went up to him afterwards. And you know when players go up to a player because they can understand when a guy's, you know, faking it or embellishing it, they'll say the same thing. That's embarrassing to our league. And so I think maybe that, not karma, but it's funny that it ended up that Lindell was the one on the ground when Pat Maroon ended up scoring, you know, the game-winning goal with under 2 minutes to go.
Now, do you think Pat hit him that hard, or do you think he faked it on that one too?
No, I don't think he faked it at all on that one. No. I do believe that, listen, Essa Lindell's a good player. He's had a heck of a year. He plays 30 minutes a night. I think this will be a moment. He'll see everything in the responses, and I don't think he'll do that again. You know what I mean? I think that's one of those learning moments. But I think on the game-winning goal, I think Patty's just got – he's got big feet. He's a big man. He just – you know, he went to get in one position, and they gave him a little shove push, and it was good enough for Patty to get to the puck behind the net. Smart move by Patty, and again, the right non-call by the referee. So, again, all those things come into play, Frank. I mean, you know, the first play against Bortuzzo, a referee could maybe not understand the embellishment and only call it on one way on the game-winning goal. It could have been one where the referee thinks that Patty trips him up and calls a penalty. And so, I was impressed by the reads by the officials, which obviously, as we know, Frank, they don't get a whole lot of credit this day and age with how tough this game is to referee.
Darren, how about the progression of Pat Maroon? On January 1st, he was sitting there with three goals, and nobody in this town thought there was any chance he would come back. And now it's to a point where, hey, you have to bring him back.
This is a nice story that he's writing, and I'm really happy for Patty because, as you well know, Frank, we're there a lot, and I know during those moments there's a lot of fans that were probably thinking, boy, these, you know, even as broadcasters, we're pretty easy on these guys or not tough enough on their lack of performance. But, you know, there were still some things that I thought they were sorting out. Patty himself, I didn't think he was very confident early in the year, to be honest with you, Frank. I remember seeing a player in Edmonton and Anaheim and New Jersey, a guy that could handle the puck and make a play down low, but have the confidence to stick handle. And early in the year, I was surprised that he didn't have the confidence and the swagger to do that. And, you know, until Craig Berube put that line together and said, Patty, hold on to the puck. Like, I think he's great for Berube, and Berube's great for him because he encourages handling the puck. And unlike a lot of coaches that want everybody to play fast and furious, some guys can't play fast and furious. He plays a puck control game that wears out the other team's D. And if you heard Alex Pietrangelo after the game last night, he said, I wouldn't want to play him every night. And he's right. He wears you down, even if he's scoring or not scoring. And I said that at the beginning of the year. Just watch this guy after a shift, and then watch the other team's defenseman that's on him after a shift. He can't recover. So those are some of the great things that Patty does. But I'm happy for him because he's a St. Louis boy, and to walk around town when it doesn't work, that's no fun. He's going to live here forever. And so for him personally, I'm just really thrilled for him and that it's working out this way.
Have you ever seen, as we talk about dramatic turnarounds, a guy struggle so much during the regular season like Jaden Schwartz and then, mm-hmm. you know, be the best player on your team in the postseason so far?
What a funny game this is, huh? Yeah, I honestly didn't know where Jaden's game went at the beginning. I did feel as if some of that moxie of his was gone, maybe because at the beginning of the year there were so many new players and he wasn't getting that first power play unit. He wasn't getting those offenses going face-offs with Braden Schenn. It was just such a change for him from last year when he had such a great year. And when Craig Berube took over, he did sort things out and he did instill confidence. It's funny, I'll use the word confidence an awful lot, but it's the first thing that Craig Berube said when he took over. He said, there's a lot of guys that don't have confidence right now, and it's my job to instill confidence back into their game. And it's imperative in any job you have that your bosses think highly of you. And when they think highly of you, you're going to do a much better job and have more confidence in yourself. And that's, for me, that's been Craig Berube's biggest challenge, and that's been his biggest success, in my opinion.
Well, elaborate on that, because Berube doesn't strike me as like a touchy-feely, hey, I believe in you kind of coach. But but he did do this, so explain it a little bit more.
Well, he may not seem touchy-feely, but he's got a great feel for personalities in the game. And, you know, we see a no-nonsense answer to a question. These players see a guy inside that room that he can put his arm around them and give them a little boost of confidence, and then he can kick them in the groin and knock them down if they need that too. If they need to be humble, they could do that, Frank. But I think the biggest thing is the ability to see a player's value and worth and the good things that they do and build them up in that area. And he's told these players for 3 months, when we've talked to him about another team that the Blues are playing, you go into Tampa Bay and let's say us as broadcasters say, well, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? They're good at this. They're good at that. He stops you right in your tracks. He says, you know what? We're good at this. We're good at that. We're a really good team. And that's the way he talks to his players. Like, we're a really good team, so be a really good team. And that's where confidence comes from.
Darren Pang joins us, Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. I mentioned this earlier. It's almost like the hockey gods have decided, because of the Blues' goaltending woes in the postseason, from the Fuhrer injury to the John Casey goal by Yzerman to Roman Turk blowing up, that we deserve something like this. We deserve to have this guy descending down. Kind of an evaluation of Jordan Binnington so far.
Well, there has been a lot of years of disappointment here. You're right. There's been some great moments by goalies, and getting to the Western Conference Final a few years with Brian Elliott was a real great achievement. But Jordan Binnington's unique in a lot of the things that he does. First of all, the first time people heard him say something, it was, you know, it was very confident way of saying, do I look nervous? And you know, that's kind of his shtick, and he does that kind of stuff, and that's great. But then it wasn't that. It was how he backed everything up. Never lost more than 2 games in a row in the regular season. His record after a loss in the playoffs and in the regular season is 8-1. That's resilience and that's resolve. And when the goalie has that, then the players have that because they do not worry about what's behind them. And the other thing is he just makes saves. I've never seen a goalie with the way the game has changed. Most goalies are really big and they're heavy and they're great on a lot of angle shots, but they don't find a lot of shots in their crease. Jordan Binnington's a slight goaltender that's only 6'1", but all the pucks around the crease, he sniffs them out. You watch a game and find out how many loose pucks are in the crease that he covers up or finds in his glove. There's no hesitation. There's no question marks. There's no goals that just get tapped in and everybody goes, why didn't the goalie have that puck? He finds pucks. He really has a great level of concentration on the puck. I just love watching him play.
How about Alex Pietrangelo's night? It was really special for a moment, and then it was followed up by a costly turnover. But the captain in general?
Well, I think he's resilient. then that's one of the things that, you know, that Alex can answer a question after a game, and I'll kind of, you know, think of what he said and go, I didn't quite see it that way. But he's able to shrug off bad moments and just go about his business. And sometimes for me, it becomes frustrating because I'm thinking to myself, no, that's not the way it went. And as a former goalie, I always, you know, would be, well, that's my fault. I would take blame. And he's not that way. And he deflects criticism very well. And then he just goes out and plays. But that's the long-term stability of a guy like Alex. He's not going to get too down, and he's not going to get too high. And that's the way this team's kind of plowed along. So, yeah, he can have a bad moment and maybe cough up a puck or make a bad read, and then bang, puck gets on his tape and he's got a one-timer. But think about that shorthanded goal again. The coach made his change. Alex was supposed to be on that unit, if I'm not mistaken. And he put on Vince Dunn, and then he went back with the Transvaal in the next unit, and he ends up scoring right after the power play ends.
Mm. What about Doug Armstrong's work in the off season and all those guys who were acquired on the same day, or maybe Maroon was a little bit later? Mm. Boy, they just paid huge dividends. Doug Armstrong had one hell of an off season.
Well, he did, and you remember when that all happened, and everybody around the league. It wasn't just us locally here. It was everybody around the league. They thought he's just put together a championship caliber team, and at that time. Everybody thought that he put together a team that was either going to win the Central or be in the top three, no questions asked. And so when it started the way it started, you can imagine everybody's frustration because expectations rose so high, maybe too high. And I like the fact that Army, you know, brought this team aside, and I believe it was just before Christmas, and it was either blowing up the team, rumors were going rampant, or staying with the group that he put together. And he told these players that he was doubling down right now. Going to double down on the group he put together, but there's 3 or 4 weeks that you've got to do this. Otherwise, look around the room and some of your best buddies aren't going to be here. That's the facts. So figure it out. I'm doubling down on you. I'm not making a move for the next 3 or 4 weeks, but you guys got to show me what you've got. And they showed him what he's got. So I'm happy for Army because he puts his heart and soul into it, and he wants this city to have a championship.
So I was not aware of that. He actually addressed the team around Christmas time and said, okay, I'm going to stay with you for another month, and then if it doesn't work out, then we're going to make some moves?
Yep, and I don't know exactly if he said a month, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but at that point, you know, he's already talking to general managers, I'm sure, and he's got different moves in play, and the players knew it, and he doubled down on the players that he put together. And I love the fact that he did. It showed great leadership that he did that to these players, and I think it gave them a lot of confidence at the same time.
And then moving forward, I imagine Ben Bishop, you know, after maybe not a great game, is going to come out and have a great game like he did in game two. Do you anticipate mm-hmm. this being a 6 or 7 game series?
I do, absolutely. I mean, let's face it, Dallas will regroup. Their coach said that they didn't play as well as the Blues did last night. And they'll come out with their best. They'll play tomorrow night's game like it's game 7, and they'll throw everything at the St. Louis Blues. So for me, if the Blues are going to go up 3-1, the first star of the game is going to be Jordan Binnington. He's going to have to be one of the first, you know, three stars of the game because I think everything's coming at him, and it's going to be a heck of a game. But I still envision this being a 6 or 7 game series. I think that's just the way you've got to expect it at this time of year. And that's got to be your mindset.
Oh, one more thing. The dent in the Blues armor so far in this series has been the power play. If
yes, it has.
Craig Berube calls you and say, hey, Darren, what do you think? What would you tell him?
I'd say call Brett Hull. I'd say call Brett Hull. I gave enough power play goals. I know what a good power play is, and I gave up a ton to Hulley. Listen, I do believe that there is a way to get to the middle of the ice just a little bit better. I think we're spending way too much time on the top of the points with predictable play. It's slow developing. There's no unpredictability to it and not enough disguise to it. So for me, if you're not going to get enough disguise from the point, then get back to the meat and potatoes of it. It starts with the entries into the zone where they've really struggled. I think they've got to get pucks in deep and support it on the other side and then move it to the point and shoot the puck at the, you know, from the middle of the ice right towards the net. I know that seems simple, But I think whenever you're struggling and thinking too much, it becomes too predictable and too slow moving. And that's when you've got to go right back to the simplicity of the game.
Honored to have you on the program. The only downside of this postseason is we're not getting you for 3 hours a night, but I know you're doing pre and post, and you're doing a great job there. It's such a pleasure to get your hockey insight, sir. Thank you so much.
Frank, it's my pleasure. Look forward to tomorrow, pal. Thanks.
All right. Darren Pang joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. And look, I am not, like, ticked off at the NBC coverage. You know, I think Kenny Albert's a pro. And, you know, I hate to say it, I do not know that woman's name, but she's outstanding. They do a good job. But, man, give me on television John Kelly and Darren Pang any day of the week. And I think everybody in St. Louis feels the same way, don't you think, Pozzy?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, I got to tell you, it was John Davidson who decided to bring in Darren. And it was one of the first times that the Blues went outside the family to be an analyst, because they've used former players most of the time. And John Davidson, who was a terrific broadcaster in his own right, knew what he was doing, because Pang is outstanding. All right, we'll take a short timeout. One of the topics today is the pests, the people you hated the most when the Blues played in the postseason. Who would it be for you? Maryville University listener line, 855-282-8255. Or we also have the text lines open at that same number. But before we go to break, a quick word about one of our great sponsors, and that is Dr. Michael Jones. If you are looking to get your eyes fixed and you're sick of contacts and glasses, I recommend Quantum Vision Centers and Dr. Michael Jones. He's regarded as one of the great eye surgeons in the country. And the phone number is 855-260-EYES, 855-260-EYES. He can get that LASIK surgery done in about 11 or 12 seconds. Dr. Michael Jones. We'll take a break. We're coming right back.